This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Today is the runoff election between incumbent President George Weah and the former Vice President Joseph Boakai.
That's reporter Denise Nimpson in Monrovia with updates on today's runoff election in Liberia. Details coming up. Also, the European Union warns of the danger of another genocide in Sudan's Darfur region. And thousands of people are marching at a rally for Israel in Washington, D.C. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The United Nations Humanitarian Office, known as OCHA, today said fighting between Israeli troops and Palestinian militants in northern Gaza caused 200,000 people to flee south in the past 10 days. OCHA also said at least 60% of hospitals in the territory no longer function. Some of the fighting is around hospitals where patients, newborns, and medics are stranded with no electricity and dwindling supplies. Israel accuses Hamas of using hospitals as cover for its fighters, alleging that Hamas has set up its main command center in and beneath Shifa Hospital, the largest in the besieged territory. Both Hamas and Shifa Hospital staff deny the Israeli allegations. More than two-thirds of Gaza's population of 2.3 million have fled their homes since the war began on October 7th, when Hamas fighters attacked communities in Israel, killing more than 1,200 people, and the fighters also hold about 240 people hostage in Gaza. The Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza says nearly 12,000 residents of the enclave have died. Also today, the United States said it imposed a third round of sanctions on a group of Hamas officials, members of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, who transfer money from Iran to Gaza and a Lebanese money exchange service that facilitates the transfers. The Treasury Department says this and two previous rounds of sanctions against Hamas and its affiliates are aimed at protecting the international financial system from abuse by Hamas militants and their enablers. For more on the latest development in the conflict, we have my colleague Linda Grandstein in Jerusalem on the line. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you, Yehia.
So, Linda, Israeli forces have reached the gates of Gaza's largest hospital, Al-Shifa. What is the significance? What is being reported there?
So the fighting is very heavy around the hospital, and there are several thousand people still in the hospital, both patients and doctors and some people who haven't left despite all of the, you know, Israeli warnings to do so. And Israel says that it has offered to help the get the premature babies from the incubators and take them to another hospital. Israel also released footage today from nearby hospital, not from Shifa Hospital, but from Rantisi Hospital, which is a pediatric children's cancer hospital, of an underground tunnel under the hospital and weapons that were found there and a room that Israel says looks like the hostages could have been held there. There were diapers and a baby bottle, and it was empty when they found it. And obviously, you know, that supposedly the hostages had been moved. And I think it just sort of reminded me, at least, of the fact that there are babies in captivity without their parents. It's now 39 days. So it's just sort of hard to imagine that.
So Shifa is the Gaza's largest and best equipped hospital. And is there any evidence for Israeli claims that the facility also is used by Hamas for military purposes?
Well, Israel has been saying this for a long time, and they've released, you know, some footage that they say, for example, there is a square opening just outside the hospital that they say they believe leads to an underground tunnel. Palestinians say it's a water reservoir and not an underground tunnel, and I think that's why they released this footage from the Rantisi Hospital to show that at least, you know, that they know that hospitals are being used as, you know, for underground and for sheltering Hamas, and that therefore Hamas is really holding the population of Gaza like human shields. But I don't know that we have concrete proof that the same situation exists at Shifa, although it is certainly plausible.
And you said, you know, the fighting is raging, but President Joe Biden has said that Gaza's largest hospital must be protected and called for less intrusive action by Israeli forces. You think they will heed that suggestion?
Well, you know, the thing is, the Shifa Hospital, I mean, I've been there. It's right in the middle of the city. It's not that it's anyplace else. And, you know, if you look at the footage that's coming out of Gaza, whole neighborhoods have been leveled, have been destroyed. Even once the fighting ends, you know, I don't know where the Palestinians who fled the north are going to be able to go back to. Israel, former chief of staff Benny Gantz, who recently joined the government, today said that even if Israel pauses the fighting as part of a potential hostage deal, it will continue pursuing its war to dislodge Hamas's control over Gaza. He said that Israel will continue until its goals are achieved, and that he said it aims to uproot Hamas's political and military control over the Strip. And Prime Minister Netanyahu has repeatedly said that Gaza after Hamas must be demilitarized and de-radicalized.
Has there been any progress in negotiations to release the hostages held in Gaza?
Well, the Hamas spokesman made a video that was posted on Telegram in which he said that Hamas is willing to release 70 of the hostages, apparently the women, children, and ill people, in exchange for a five-day ceasefire. So that would be roughly, you know, a little more than a quarter of the hostages in exchange for the five-day ceasefire. Israel has said that 5 days is too long, and that they're afraid that in 5 days Hamas will be able to re-equip and rearm. They're also afraid that they'll sort of lose the momentum, and there will be, during that 5 days, growing international pressure to stop the fighting. At the same time, the hostage families today started a march from Tel Aviv, which is where the hostage headquarters is, all the way to Jerusalem. It's going to take them 5 days, and earlier it was pouring rain before, so I'm sure it's not very pleasant to be doing that.
And lastly, Linda, in the United States yesterday, there were large protests calling for a ceasefire in Gaza in some cities, including Oakland, California, and Chicago. And there is a pro-Israeli rally today here in Washington, D.C. So how do people view such protests over where you are?
Well, I think, you know, that it depends, you know, which side you're on or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think for Palestinians to see Americans protesting like that, and it was, you know, very encouraging to them. I know many Israelis are very happy. They're expecting 60,000 people on the march in Washington today, which is quite a lot. So I think there's, you know, a feeling of, you know, support from, for example, for Israelis from the American Jewish community about this rally today. At the same time, I think that Israel says it's going to make its decisions kind of based on what it feels it needs to do. And of course, taking the opinion of President Biden and the United States into account, but not necessarily looking all that carefully at the public.
Linda Gradstein, updating us from Jerusalem. Thank you for your input.
Sure, thank you.
Today, tens of thousands of protesters are expected at the March of Israel here in Washington, D.C. Security is tight around the National Mall near the U.S. Capitol where demonstrators are gathering, and the organizers say the march is intended to show support for Israel and to condemn anti-Semitism. VOA's Leah Seyoum and Anthony Labruto are out in the mall, and we have them on the line. We have Anthony on the line to tell us of what's going on.
Hello, Yehiat. Yes, preparations have been going on the National Mall here throughout the morning. So the media tent that we're currently within is packed, and people have been starting to file in ahead of this 1 p.m. rally start time. So this event is being organized by the Jewish Federation of North America and the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. unlike other rallies that we've covered in the past here in the National Mall, this one has a much larger expected turnout. Around 60,000 people, like you said, are expected to be in the National Mall here in Wednesday by this 1 p.m. start time, just within a couple of hours. So security here is also noticeably tighter, with Washington Mayor Muriel Bowser calling for support of the National Guard. The Washington, D.C. Police Department is also currently here as well. And the Department of Homeland Security has also declared this rally to be a level one security event, which is typically designated for concerts, for major sporting events, with no discernible or credible threat.
So, Anthony, what do organizers say is the goal of this rally?
So the goal of this rally here, in the direct words of the organizers, is to express their support for Israel and to free hostages and combat anti-Semitism. So organizers have also further said that the march will be an opportunity for specifically Americans to come together in solidarity with the people of Israel to demonstrate their commitment to what they say is America's most important ally in the Middle East and to condemn that rising trend of anti-Semitic violence and harassment that's being seen all throughout the country.
And people are trickling in, Anthony. So what are people saying as they head to the National Mall for the rally?
So the few that I've spoken to so far here in the National Mall, they've really, really galvanized around this rally's message of combating anti-Semitism. So around me, there's a large number of particularly youth, and that I've reported on throughout the Israel-Hamas complex. One of the biggest things American youth are noticing in their day-to-day lives is the rise of anti-Semitism across college campuses in their day-to-day lives. And so currently, actually, as I'm speaking to you, there's a student-specific rally being held ahead of the full rally at 1 p.m. And so many people gathered here have family in Israel that are serving in the Israeli Defense Force or simply within the country and are afraid of what will come and want a solution from within the international community and particularly America in that quickest way possible. And it's also important to note, too, that the Palestinian Youth Movement, one of the major Palestinian organizations within Washington, D.C., has called for their supporters to not engage with the March for Israel event here today. So I've yet to see any Palestinian counter-protesters here, but that could certainly change leading up to this May event.
March for Israel here in Washington, D.C. VOA's Anthony Labruto covering. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Liberians are voting today in a runoff election between President George Weah and former Vice President Joseph Boakai after a fiercely fought first round in which neither was able to score over 50% of the vote to secure an outright victory. Former soccer star Weah led the first round, gaining 43.83% of the vote, and Boakai had 43.44%. The runoff is a rematch of the 2017 second round in which Weah, surfing on a wave of popular support, defeated Boakai with 61.54%. For the latest, our reporter Denise Nipson is standing by in Monrovia.
Today is the runoff election between incumbent President George Weah and the former Vice President Joseph Boakai. Turned out in terms of going to the polls to vote for the president, the one who will lead the country for the next 6 years. And today the turnout is a bit low as compared to the first round of election, where you have huge turnout. Although the first round of election was the general election, as it is on today, most of the centers that we visited or have visited, it shows a slow pace of voting. The voters are coming in one at a time, and there's not much of a crowd. That's what is being experienced in Liberia during this voting process.
And Denise, this runoff rematch, it's the same as the one in 2017, you remember, in which we are won by 61.54%.
Yes, it is the same in 2017, and it is the same candidate who are facing each other again in the runoff election. in 2017, in the runoff election, you have George Weah and Joseph Boakai, where Weah defeated Boakai in the election. So this time around, it is. But with this one, the incumbent is seeking a second term.
In the general election, the results were very, very, very close. It was a razor-thin margin between Boakai and Weah. Weah got 43.83% and Boakai got 43.44%. So now, what you are seeing is what? The support of the largest number of the eliminated candidates will go for one candidate or the other?
But that will depend on the vote that will be cast today. It will be reflected from the supporters how they will vote. If they vote for either Weah or Boakai, then it shows that either of the one of them will win the election. But as it is, for the first round election, that was absolute majority, the 50+1. But this is just simple majority, which shows that the candidate with the higher number of votes wins the election at the end of the day. So you don't have to have the 50% to win.
Either candidate, Boakai or Weah, have they made any appearance today on this day where a runoff election is taking place?
No, but what I learned is that they went to their respective areas where they do cast their vote, and they voted and went back. So it is as such that they won't be seen in the public space except for going to cast their vote and return to whatsoever they are and waiting to the last minute to hear what the preliminary results that will be coming up from by this evening when the polls are closed.
When should we expect a result, a final decision?
So according to the Constitution, the result should be given within 15 days. The Constitution says within 15 days, the election result should be announced. That's what the National Elections Commission chairperson has said. Even I spoke to her this morning asking whether the result, knowing that it's just two candidates in the race, whether you will have the result within a day or two. And she said, no, they are going by the Constitution because there will be challenges at other areas where they might not get the ballot papers that were cast in time to be able to count them. So within 15 days, they will be announcing preliminary results, and the final result will be given. So that will be perhaps in 4 days, 5 days, a week or so before we get to know who wins the election.
That was reporter Denise Nemsed speaking with me by phone from the capital of Liberia, Monrovia. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The European Union has condemned increased fighting in Sudan's Darfur region, warning of the danger of another genocide. From 2003 to 2008, some 300,000 people were killed and an estimated 2 million were displaced by conflict in the region. 700 people were reportedly killed in West Darfur in the past several days in clashes between the Sudan Army and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, the RSF. The RSF said last week it took control of the army headquarters in West Darfur's capital, El Jenina. Sama Salaman, a Sudanese strategic analyst and president of the U.S. Education Sudanese Association, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam heavy fighting in Darfur began in June.
We saw the initial peak in violence in Darfur on June 16th, and that is when the RSF, or the Rapid Support Forces, that are being led by General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, who is head of the paramilitary army, which was previously known as the Janjaweed, and Khamis Abu Bakr, the governor of West of Darfur, is basically abducted and killed hours after he spoke to one of the Gulf TV stations and described the killings being carried out by the RSF as genocide. You know, about a month later, the U.S. sanctioned Abdelrahim Dagalo. What is really unfortunate is that RSF commander Abdurrahman Juma is one of the commanders who's led the recent wave of violence in El Jenina. And so what's going on now is that there is a vicious killing of many members of the Mestalit tribe in the El Janana city of West Darfur.
What is with the Mestalit community that the RSF is going after these people again? I mean, these are men and women and children, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, they go after them by burning their villages, killing the men and raping the women. So we're seeing a repeat of huge amounts of atrocities and war crimes, including gender and sexual-based violence. This systematic killing and displacement of the Mestalit is not new. It follows decades of basically the Mestalit and other similar tribes. And these are basically sedentary tribes who have been involved in tensions with some of the pastoralist tribes. And so what happened is that 20 years ago, we saw a huge number of Arab tribal militias fighting with many of the pastoralist indigenous tribes, such as the Mestalit. And the fight was over land and diminishing water resources. You also had a situation where these groups, such as the Mestalit, they had been marginalized also for many years. So many of these tribal leaders took up arms against Bashir. And what Bashir did, he responded very swiftly by quelling these armed movements and by also sending forces, militia forces like the Janjaweed. The Janjaweed, which is now headed up in its rebranded, more evolved form, known as the RSF. So what you really have is you have an ethnic fight overlaid with a fight for fertile land and resources.
That's Sama Salaman, a Sudanese strategic analyst and president of the U.S. Education Sudanese Association. She was speaking with my colleague, Carol Van Dam. Zimbabwe's main opposition, Citizens Coalition for Change, says its members are under attack. This comes after the recent abduction and murder of an opposition supporter who was campaigning for upcoming elections. Reporter Kuzai Zanawashi in Harare has more details.
Opposition supporter Tapfumane Masaya was last seen when armed men forced him into a vehicle Saturday in Mavuku, a high-density area southeast of Harare. He had been campaigning for an upcoming parliamentary by-election on December 9th. His body was found days later in the outskirts of Harare's central business district. Promise Mkwananzi is the spokesperson of the main opposition party, Citizens Coalition for Change.
The position is of great concern on the safety and the security of citizens of Zimbabwe, in particular those that are perceived to hold different views from the ruling ZANU-PF party. This is obviously not an isolated incident. It is a part and parcel of some systematic perpetration of violence against the citizens of Zimbabwe.
Mkwananzi fears the crackdown will continue.
We are worried about the prevalence of political violence across the country that commenced just before the elections, during the elections, and that have escalated in the post-election period. And obviously, the by-elections have been some kind of an inflammation on an already disturbing situation as experienced in Mavuku, where a person has actually been killed on account of political office.
Rashid Mukundu is a political analyst. He says the development represents an increase into what he says the political and governance style of the ruling ZANU-PF party.
It's no longer a question of the ZANU-PF being aggressive on the opposition, but it seems that there is an attempt to not only cow into submission, but also completely destroy the opposition and instill fear amongst the citizens to diminish the political participation.
Farai Marapira is the ruling ZANU-PF Director of Information and Publicity.
As ZANU-PF, we don't comment on matters that are before the police or any one of our legal systems. It's unfortunate we've got an opposition that is very irresponsible, that is very immature. It is not even in their concern that there is a family that is grieving. There's a family that needs proper answers. There's a family that needs closure, which is outside of politics. As ZANU-PF, we stick to the words of our president, who preaches peace, peace and peace, and says no to violence.
Masaya's abduction came just a few weeks after opposition lawmaker Takudzwa Ngadzwore was abducted, tortured, and dumped in the outskirts of Harare. Mukundu says this is a further deepening of the political crisis in Zimbabwe. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe in Harare, Zimbabwe.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Thanks for